Just about 7:09 in the morning. The program is up front. My name is Brian Edwards-Tieker, joined in KPFA studios by Mitch Jezerich, who has broken out of his Monday signature time.
Is it not Monday, Brian? I wasn't sure when I woke up when the alarm at 5.
Well, you can smell the jet fumes on the tarmac in Washington,
D.C. That's actually the alcohol I spilled on my shirt last night.
I'm glad you made it in, sir.
I didn't have time to quite fully, you know, recover yet, but good morning. Good morning, everybody.
You're here to help close out the topics we raised this morning when you were in, as all pending legislative standoffs seem to be rocketing towards at least temporary resolutions. Starting with the question of funding the federal government and averting a federal government shutdown at midnight tonight. Which apparently is what was in the works. So Mitch McConnell just put something on Donald Trump's desk.
No.
He has sent something to the House.
Yes.
What is the something?
And I think the deadline's midnight tomorrow night.
Well, just don't listen to me.
And I listen to you every day. Okay. So last night, the Senate moved in order to try to keep the government open. And in doing that, what they did, and we've talked about this measure many, many times over the last few years, Brian, called a continuing resolution, which means that you continue funding the government at its current level until a particular date when the money will then come to an end. And then oftentimes, and we've seen this in the past, we've basically have done budgeting from one continuing resolution to another continuing resolution to another continuing resolution. What this one does, it only goes for about maybe a little under 2 months until February 8th. What the Senate passed would keep the government open until February 8th, when then you'll have a new Congress in, and then they'll have to figure out what's going to happen with Donald Trump. So the Senate passed this just by voice vote yesterday, which meant no one was there to object. It doesn't necessarily mean that somebody wouldn't object. It was just no one was really there to object to it. So it now goes over to the House of Representatives, where it's a little more tricky, actually. And probably going to pass, but not assured, and somewhat of a minefield for Republicans, because this whole fight has been over $5 billion that Donald Trump has said that he wants for a border wall. And he's not going to get that out of this continuing resolution whatsoever. And he has said previously that he's willing to shut, and he would shut the government down if he did not get that $5 billion. That's not a good situation for Republicans. It's not a good look. They're still in control of the entire government. Granted, they still need 60 votes in the Senate to get something through. But what has happened is we don't know how Trump is going to respond to this bill. But, you know, people who follow politics closely say there have been overtures from the White House saying they may end up supporting this continuing resolution out of the Senate. But the minefield is there are really conservative Republicans that think this is their last chance with a Democratic-controlled House of Representatives coming in the next session, their last chance to force money for a wall on the southern border. So you have members like Mark Meadows, who is the chair of the Freedom Caucus, Jim Jordan, another influential conservative member. You have media pundits like Ann Coulter and Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity. I looked for Sean Hannity yesterday, but he's on vacation, so I didn't get his take on it. Probably the most important of all the conservative commentators, who are very upset about this. And Ann Coulter, you know, she likes to throw bombs in every direction she can, was actually ripping the president if he were to go forward with this. So there's this pressure from the far right saying, you know, shut the government down. You said you're going to do it. You said you're going to do it for the border. We're certainly not going to get it if Nancy Pelosi is the Speaker of the House of Representatives. Now, I'm not 100% sure that's actually true, but that's what they're saying.
Right.
And so they're definitely pushing the president to even if it gets through the House of Representatives. And that is a difficult thing, too, because I think what Republican leadership is worried about here as we are in the final days of Paul Ryan's speakership, what they're worried about is doing it with a majority of Democratic lawmakers voting for it and a majority of Republicans voting against it, but still getting enough Republicans probably to vote for it to pass. That might be what ends up happening. That's not the look that they want, and that's not the look that the president's going to want either.
And it's not how the Republican has managed its control of the House for lo these many years.
The Hastert, the Dennis Hastert right. rule from the time that I covered Congress beginning in 2003. And the Dennis Hastert rule was always, we will not vote on a bill. We will not bring a bill to the House floor for a vote unless the majority of our own Republican caucus supports that bill. And they have stuck to that rule for a very long time. In fact, I think Mitch McConnell's even gone a little bit further and how he has run the Senate. But anyways, that all said, and it's also a political minefield for the president because his politics has always been for his base, right? That's where he gets his support. He sort of eschewed these, you know, centrist Republicans and even reformed the party and changed the party. And so that's where he gets his support. And you know, I think the electoral strategy for him in his own mind is, well, I just get a big turnout from these folks and you know, it can be close enough to where we could rig it and win maybe. But this is a problem for the president. If he looks like he's soft on probably the biggest issue of his campaign. That being the wall.
Yeah. And another complicating factor in terms of his relationship with his caucus is that he suddenly finds himself at odds with tons of Republicans in Washington over his announcement on Twitter yesterday that he wants to pull all U.S. troops out of Syria. We're going to go into depth about what this means in Syria with Reese Ehrlich next hour when he comes in studio. He's been kind of emailing back and forth with his contacts in the country and different factions on the ground all night to kind of take their temperature on what they think this will mean. But in terms of U.S. national politics, he's been getting trashed over the course of the past 24 hours by people who have at least recently been stalwart defenders of the president, like Republican Senator Lindsey Graham mm-hmm. of South Carolina. I mean, do you think it's just posturing, or is there a serious poisoning of the well here that could affect his ability to command loyalty from congressional Republicans?
Well, I guess posturing by which side? It's just a Twitter announcement. Hard to go against after you said, it's 2,000 soldiers home from Syria by Christmas. I mean, he put it bluntly, just like that. So is it posturing on his end where he ends up backing down? Is it posturing by congressional Republicans? And not just congressional Republicans. There is bipartisan opposition to what Donald Trump announced about bringing troops out of Syria. That doesn't mean that there's not at least some that do support that move. There are. Republican Ted Lieu is in support of bringing the troops home. He says there's never been a plan, whether it be the Obama administration or the Trump administration, exactly what to do there. Of course, it gets more complicated. I won't dive into that. Reese Ehrlich can do it much better than I can. Barbara Lee, our own congressional member here, has put out a statement saying that while she supports reducing the size of the U.S. military around the seas, and I think also in Syria, she at least doesn't want it to see she sort of hedged her statement a little bit in the sense of she seemed to be okay with taking troops out of Syria at the same time. Don't just leave Syria without any kind of strong diplomatic mission there for what happens after the troops leave. But I do think people like Barbara Lee and there's others too, but people like Barbara Lee and Ted Lieu are probably in the minority of lawmakers, even within the Democratic caucus.
I just want to correct something that popped out earlier. Ted Lieu is a Democrat representing California.
That's what I meant.
And now it's what we said.
Is that what I said?
Now it's what we
said. Did I call a Republican? I'm going to go back and listen to the tape. Sometimes
it's early,
I mix
man.
Things up. Sometimes I mix things up.
All right. So that's where people are landing on Syria. And as I said, we'll get into that more in the 8 o'clock hour. And the continuing resolution is basically a punt. This is a setup for a budget fight that will happen between the president, a more intensely Republican-controlled Senate, and a Democrat-controlled House of Representatives in the new session. The one area where lawmaking seems to actually be happening in D.C. at this late date is on the topic of criminal justice reform, to the surprise of many. Can you walk us through what's happening?
So the Senate has approved by overwhelming vote, I think something like 87-2, an act called the First Step Act. And this is criminal justice reform, largely targeted. It does many things, largely targeting adjusting how minimum sentences are done, giving judges more leniency in how they apply minimum sentences. I think it's important to note that we're just talking about federal prisons and federal prisoners here. We're not talking about state prisons. So it only applies to a very small fraction of how many people are actually in prison today, where most people are in state prisons where it does not apply to. There are some states that have taken the lead and have far gone beyond what the looks like the federal government is about to do. But there's some states that are also behind as well. This is kind of the first major reform of the criminal justice system at the federal level in decades. So in that sense, it's important. And, you know, it'll do many things, including it'll allow people that are in jail because of either possession or selling of crack cocaine or powder cocaine. The difference between those two, African-Americans have disproportionately been sentenced to jail for crack cocaine, oftentimes, and for a very long time, crack cocaine, even though it's basically the same drug, has had much more stiffer penalties. So on that issue, to even allow people that are in a federal prison because of crack cocaine to potentially have their sentence reconsidered and be more in line with what would have happened if it was powder cocaine, so to sort of take away that difference. It's considered a modest reform. There was a much more robust reform just a few years ago during the Obama administration, and this comes from a commission that was created by the president and vice president, I think it might have even been led by Joe Biden, to look into sentencing issues. And they had a much more stronger bill in 2015 that also had bipartisan support, but Mitch McConnell for a very long time has opposed this measure and would never allow it to come. So that's why I was saying Mitch McConnell may have taken the Dennis Hastert rule even farther. Mm-hmm. Sort of, if Mitch McConnell doesn't support it, it doesn't get to the floor, is how he has run the Senate. And that's how he has used and that's how he has approached this First Step Act. But there was a lot of pressure after the president got behind it. Again, 87-12 vote is pretty remarkable. So one of the things that were watered down, though, and I think most people think, well, this is better than nothing. Criminal justice activists would like a much stronger approach. And I think one of the things that they would like to see that this bill will not do is they would like to see everyone's sentence who's in jail right now in a federal prison to be everyone, according to these new changes that are going to happen with minimum sentencing, that they could have their own sentence reconsidered, unless it's for something
retroactive.
Yeah. That's right. So unless it's something like, again, the issue over crack cocaine, prisoners won't be able to have their sentences retroactively considered. This will be for people who are sentenced mostly here on out.
I mean, to me, the most interesting thing is that 87-12 vote, because what it suggests is there is almost no one in national politics who now sees an upside to flogging their opponents for being soft on crime, which was kind of the political dynamic that kept criminal justice reform from advancing for many, many years. Like, there's immense downside to being for it and very little upside for it. And I guess my kind of global question is, like, do we have a sense of what accounts for the shift?
Well, I think there's just there's this film, and I can't, if you'll forgive me, it escapes my the top of my head, that was making its way through Congress, that reportedly was very a documentary about sentencing in prison that was very influential on a lot of congressional members on how they view this issue. I do think there is a societal sea change in how we see things. I think you're right. I think it is significant that it was overwhelming 87-12 vote. You wouldn't have gotten this in years past. Also, in the Senate, there were Republicans. They were all Republicans who opposed it, but just 12 this time. There were many attempts to try to further water this measure down, and those all failed. And I think that's significant. That this could even been weaker than it already was coming to the floor. And then you look at the House of Representatives, and it still has to go back to the House of Representatives. House of Representatives passed a measure earlier, a similar measure, but the Senate measure goes much further than the House measure did. All basically the House measure did was to say, to create programs to try to reduce recidivism.
To prepare people for release.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, to keep people from, you know, coming back and making sure they're in a good condition to when they get out. That's all the House bill really did. So this measure from the Senate is much stronger because, again, it does, you know, address to a certain level minimum sentencing. Now it'll go to the House. I think most people anticipate it passing the House. So, but it still has to make that final step.
Yeah, there's always that X factor of... you know, people who did not win re-election, who have already left D.C. and are entering the next chapter of their lives, won't be around for a vote.
Yeah, that's a problem. Even getting back to the, and I don't know if that's going to be a problem for the First Step Act, because I think that's a lot of Republicans, because mm-hmm. they just lost 40 seats, right? So mm-hmm. there's a lot of them who don't even want to be in Washington right now. So I don't think that would actually affect the passage of the First Step Act. But it does complicate the ability to be able to pass this continuing resolution. You know, if these were Republicans that would have supported it and are now out, and again, you have this insurgency from the Freedom Caucus in the House of Representatives that are going to try to, again, you know, yesterday, and I'm sorry to bring you back to the whole spending measure, but 1 a.m. This morning, I guess, 1 a.m. this morning, the House Rules Committee was meeting in order to try to pick a time in the rules for today's debate over this continuing resolution. And instead, they stalled the whole thing. There's not even a scheduled debate right now on the continuing resolution because they wanted the Republican caucus to first be able to meet and talk about this issue. So again, there are still little sticking issues in the House. I think most people think it's still going to pass through, but probably because of Democrats. And again, that's not a good look for Paul Ryan, who's in his final few days here as the Speaker of the House of Representatives. He gave his
farewell
address yesterday at the Library of Congress. And I think it's significant. This is two speakers in a row who in their farewell address has said that Congress is broken. John Boehner very much said the same thing at the end of his speakership as well. I think that's significant.
Yeah. Yeah, they should know.
I mean, what's his legacy is going to basically be the tax bill.
Right.
Right? The tax cut bill.
And I think, notably, he is someone who rose through the ranks of the Republican Party by coming in after the George W. Bush years saying, making a mea culpa, saying we abandoned our principles by signing off on expanded deficits when George W. Bush was the president. And what does he do when he is the Speaker of the House? Shepherds through a tax bill that looks to be on track to blow up the federal deficit to something in excess of $1 trillion per year in very short order.
Yeah, this guy was a rising star, a young rising star of the Republican Party. And he was even a vice presidential candidate with Mitt Romney. And what ends up happening at the age of 48, he's out. Doesn't mean he doesn't have a comeback in his future at some time.
Yeah.
But it's quite a story.
It just goes to show you that his strong talk about politics was rooted in not having a voting record, not necessarily willingness to adhere to those principles in the face of adversity.
In a new environment.
Yeah.
And how politics work in Congress, too. And we'll see what happens with Nancy Pelosi next. She'll get a second shot at it.
Yeah. It's easy to be in the opposition. That's The View from Washington. Mitch Jezerich, thank you so much. It's been marvelous spending 2018 with you. I guess we won't see you till the new year.
Oh, wow. Well, I'll probably see you after the show, Brian.
That's fair enough.
But I'm going to be taking a couple of weeks off after this week. So, yes, but I'll be back.
Excellent. We look forward to it.
If I'm lucky.
Kat Brooks just confirmed she'll be back in right after New Year's weekend, too.
Looking forward to that.
Looking forward to a reunion on the air. And again, we'll be picking up the main news from Washington, which is President Donald Trump's announcement via Twitter yesterday that he intends to pull all U.S. troops out of Syria.